Senator, I have David Leventhal from Forward Nation Radio on the line again.
I'm not going to be talking to the likes of that asshole. You could just go ahead and hang that phone up.
Okay, like everybody else then?
I don't know why that ignoramus keeps calling me.
Senator, I have Charles and David Koch on the line.
Oh, yes, I will take that call. Hello, sirs. Yes. Well, we're disappointed, too. Yeah. It turns out some of the senators got to see the bill before they had to vote on it. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, there seemed to be some concern about people talking to them about a whole bunch of dead people. Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of them would be Democrats. I don't get that either. But we sent them home for the holiday, and we're going to have to work on trying to persuade them. Yeah, so it's going to take a bit more money. Yeah. And we're going to need some more media, too. Yeah, Fox News just isn't quite doing it. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, we're going to get this done for you. And we're still working on those tax cuts. We figure several trillion dollars, much of which is going to go right to you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, we still have my wife there running the Department of Anti-Labor. yeah, okay. I'm making some final calculations here. I think a cool $3 billion or so ought to do it. Yeah. Okay, you want to send that to the Swiss account? Or the Cayman account? Deutsche Bank? Russia?
It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is. The host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Hello and welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. Thanks again for joining us. On today's show, we're going to have a bit on the news, and then we're going to spend a bunch of time, lion's share of the show, on reasoning fallacies. I think this is going to be an important show for you. Get your friends to listen. Reasoning fallacies and understanding how they work, I think, will help you listen to anything coming out of this administration or the Republican Party. We will not be doing listener questions today. Please do keep the questions coming. We have a lot we want to do today. We will do a dozen listener questions next week to make up for it. I'm being told by my producer that we're not going to do a dozen listener questions next week. But please keep the questions coming. We will go back to listener questions next week. All right, starting the news, the first big bit of news, of course, is the Senate health care bill. What's happened in the past week? Well, the bill has been born. It had its coming out party, and then ultimately it went into hospice. And that's where it stands now, in hospice care, which is basically where it belongs, close to death, if not actual death. Yeah, don't give up yet your protest, because they're going to try to bring this back whenever they can. There's a lot of trillions of dollars for rich people at stake, and they're going to try to make sure that this thing comes back. What helped doom the bill were citizen protests and the CBO score, among other things, pointing out that 22 million people, additional people, would be left uninsured over the next 10 years if this bill were to be passed. That, of course, and the fact that coverage would be substantially reduced, and costs would go up for a lot of people. But wait, there's good news, aside from the fact that the bill's almost dead. We're down to 22 million additional uninsured people. When the House first started, their first bill was 24 million. The next bill was 23 million. The House bill that got passed ultimately was about 23 million. Now we're down to 22 million. So, with 25 iterations of Republican health care bills, we might get down to the same number of uninsured at the end of the day, the end of the decade, as we had under Obamacare. Now, it's true, if we go through that many iterations, by the time they're done, the only thing that will be covered by most insurance plans will be tsetse fly bites, but at least we won't be increasing the number of uninsured. We will be saving some money, too. It's amazing, letting people die apparently saves some money. Think about what the Republicans are trying to do, the irony here, what they're trying to do with the health care bill in light of the information that continues to come out about the extent of our drug, particularly opioid epidemic. It is now estimated that 60,000 drug overdose deaths occurred in the United States in 2016. 60,000. Wrap your head around that number. That's almost two 9/11s a month. That includes 1.3 million opioid hospital admissions last year. This is a serious problem. How do you go about addressing this problem? Well, I guess the way you go about addressing it if you're a Republican is you take away people's health care, and for those who continue to have health care, you take away their mental health coverage and their substance abuse coverage. Sometimes you just need to look at what's going on and think for a minute to get a sense of the extent of the catastrophe we're living through. Speaking of catastrophes, the United States Supreme Court poked its head into the news this week. It said that it took a case that it will be considering Trump's travel ban. It already has ended the travel ban for most people. For people who do not have any connection to the United States. How thoughtful, how considerate. Americans reaching out to people around the world who are suffering. Well, as long as they have some relationship to the United States, we are. But if you don't have some relation to the United States, family member here, something like that, you need not apply. Is that really who we are? Think of this in connection with an article or the study that came out this week that U.S. malaria aid has saved about 1.7 million children in Africa over the past decade. This was actually an initiative of President Boy George. Oh, how far we've come, even from that tremendously low bar. We saved 1.7 million children. Who are we as a country? Are we scared? Do we reach for our guns because there are problems in the world? Or does America reach the rest of the world? Do we cover ourselves with glory as Americans by pulling our guns? Or by reaching down to help people who are in need? How scared are we as a country? Related to that, Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, one step below the United States Supreme Court, just lifted an injunction on Mississippi's anti-gay bill and allowing people to discriminate further against gay people on, among other things, religious grounds. The United States Supreme Court is going to be considering this one too, and unfortunately, given the current makeup of the United States Supreme Court, whenever you say that, it's reason for concern. The damage that that Supreme Court's possibly going to do. What kind of religion is it that tells people to hate other people, to look down on other people? Is this really who we want to be? Is this how we want to identify ourselves as Christian? Those of us who are Christian? Is that what Christianity is all about? We could deny health care for 22 million people, leading to tens of thousands of deaths. But God knows we don't want people having sex with the wrong people or falling in love with the wrong people. We've asked all kinds of things for Muslim moderates to stand up against our extremists. Well, let's make sure the Christian moderates stand up to the extremists in their own party. As we've noted before, it is really ironic that the United States has responded to the terrorist threat posed by religious extremists by effectively flexing its Christian muscle. Our religious extremists can beat up your religious extremists. Okay, more wonderful news about compassion in the direction we're heading. Grenfell Tower, the latest news on the tower inferno in London. The death toll is now 79 at a minimum. Since that time, they've done 120 high-rise reviews, safety reviews, and every single one of them has failed the fire safety test. Turns out, while many of us look to continental Europe to give us hope for a better society, England doesn't necessarily fit in that category. In fact, it's interesting to read about this story that fire materials that are even restricted in the United States were used in London. And in fact, London, I guess, was the role model for this Trump administration. And when it comes to childish policies, they actually had a rule that said if you passed a regulation to protect the interests of the people of England, you needed to respond, I think in their case, by getting rid of three other regulations. What are we, children? You need to eat two pieces of broccoli in order to get one spoonful of ice cream. Can't we somewhat approach this as adults? So, what do we learn from 79 dead people, at least? Lots of homeless people, people losing all of their belongings. This tragedy in England. Well, what do Republicans want to do in America? Deregulate. That's right, we need more dead Americans because rich people want more money. We should learn some important lessons from this tragedy in London. And the number one lesson should be the importance of government regulations that prevent people from making money on the dead bodies of others. They saved a few dollars by putting in material that was more likely to lead to fire tragedies. Well, that also brings us to the latest iteration of Trump's infrastructure plan, which he'd been talking about rolling out for a long time. His $1 trillion infrastructure plan, the one thing that reasonable people were able to get behind him on. Well, turns out that $1 trillion infrastructure plan is now down to about $200 billion. Whoops. And what did we learn about his infrastructure plan? Well, basically, it's going to be tax cuts for the rich and deregulation. That's right, deregulation. Because after all, if we take away things like fire safety regulations and environmental regulations, what could possibly go wrong? Okay, the Treasury Department came out with a review of the Dodd-Frank financial reform bill. Some of you may recall from the news or from this show that in the wake of the financial crisis, which destroyed the world's economy, we instituted one financial reform measure to try to prevent it from happening again. Remember that the financial meltdown was the result of the removal of regulations over the course of years as this country got more and more conservative. The removal of regulations that had been enacted in the wake of the Great Depression. Once those regulations were removed, it happened again. The financial community, through its greed and incompetence, destroyed the world's economy again. So, in the wake of that, we were able to get through Dodd-Frank. Well, it turns out, Treasury review of Dodd-Frank is basically written by the financial firms. And the Republicans are setting the groundwork for limiting the reach of Dodd-Frank. What could possibly go wrong if we deregulate the financial community? Think of how much more money billionaires will make. Hey, I have a good idea. You know what this world has never seen? Damien, I'm talking to you now. Do you know what this world has never seen? It's never seen a trillionaire. That's right. It's never seen a trillionaire. How nice would it be if we finally started getting some trillionaires in our society? Hedge fund managers. Wouldn't it be cool if a billionaire hedge fund manager got to be embarrassed around his friends because he only had billions and not trillions? This is absolute insanity. Anyway, a little bit more on Russia before we move on to reasoning fallacies, just real quick. Trump has finally come out and admitted to collusion with Russia. Contravening, and this is going to really shock you, Trump said something that contravened lots of stuff he said in the past. Who could have ever seen this happening? Well, it turns out, though, Trump admits to collusion with Russia, but he says it was Obama. Obama did it. So he's willing to accept that it all happened now, because now he gets to blame it on Obama. Because it turns out we could all blame Obama for this. Obama did know about it, and trying not to be too partisan or being seen as too partisan, he somehow made the decision not to share this with the American public before the election. That got Trump to admit to something he wouldn't admit to before. And lastly, very quickly in the news, I just saw a poll that came out that Trump's competency rating was at 45%. Look, I understand that we have a lot of basically brain-dead people in this country who will support Donald Trump no matter what the hell he does. But how the hell can 45% of this country find this man and this administration to be competent? He has no clue what's going on in his own administration and changes what he's doing day by day. There doesn't seem to be a plan about anything. Who's thinking these things? All right, anyway, let's move on now. Obviously a lot more news, but that's all we have time to cover. I want to move on now to reasoning fallacies. And reasoning fallacies are the tricks that people use to deceive listeners, people who aren't being careful enough to parse their words very carefully. I want to start with a reasoning fallacy that actually isn't really a reasoning fallacy, but we have to talk about because of how prevalent it is right now in our society coming out of Republicans and the Trump administration. And that's just flat out lying. Factual misstatements. Facts are not in the eye of the beholder. They're either true or they're not true. In the past, we've had some reluctance, some limits that politicians or anybody else would get to in lying to you and misleading you. But now, those limits seem to be gone. Coming out of the Trump administration, Republicans, they'll just flat out lie. The New York Times had a great piece earlier in the week where they pointed out that for the first time in history, President Trump lied, or at least made a factual misstatement. Lie is an intentional factual misstatement. Every day for his first 40 days. Every single day. And pretty much at least one lie or factual misstatement every day after that, but apparently some days he got locked in the bathroom or lost his cell phone or couldn't figure out how to work his way out of the closet or something. And he didn't tell a public lie on those days. As we talked about, propaganda and lies only work when you discredit truth. That's why the media is the enemy of the people. This is why we have terms like alternative facts coming out of this administration. There are no alternative facts. There are true facts and there are false facts. And false facts should not be uttered or repeated. The first real reasoning fallacy I'd like to talk about is something called equivocation. And that's where you shift words. You strategically use ambiguous language to let people think that they're getting an answer different from what they're getting. When you ask your boyfriend if he loves you and he responds by saying, "I think you're great," you should be familiar with equivocation and understand that what he just said was basically no. We've seen equivocation used recently when Kamala Harris was cross-examining Attorney General Sessions recently in the Senate. And she kept trying to get him to answer a direct question. Did you see the policy allowing for you to not answer these questions, which you are using for basically every answer? And he wouldn't just say, "No, I never bothered to look at the policy that I'm using as the basis for me not answering any questions while we're here." And ultimately, John McCain had to jump in to protect him. She was trying to get him to stop equivocating. when Donald Trump says it's within his rights to reveal secrets to the Russians. Nobody argues that it's not within your rights. We just argue that you shouldn't be doing it. That's equivocation. Paul Ryan says it's within Trump's power to fire James Comey. That's fine, but nobody's arguing it's not within his power. We're arguing it's inappropriate for him to exercise that power. It's not the question that's being asked. I think maybe the best example is years ago during the Bush administration, then Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill was being interviewed on Meet the Press on Sunday morning about the Bush's first tax proposal. Bush's first tax proposal was getting criticized, imagine this, for devoting too many of its benefits to the wealthiest people in this country. Sound familiar? And it was pointed out that the wealthiest 1% received 43% of the benefits of Bush's tax cuts. And Paul O'Neill, the Treasury Secretary, was asked about this. And his response was, you know, there's a lot of speculation about stuff, like a lot of numbers going out there. But the truth is that only 22% of the benefits of Bush's income tax cuts go to the wealthiest 1%. The next day, all the media reported that there was a dispute over the actual number of the benefits of the Bush's tax cuts. But there was no dispute. Did you hear the equivocation? This is why you need practice. He was asked about the benefits of Bush's tax cuts. He responded by answering about the benefits of Bush's income tax cuts, which was only one small part of Bush's tax plan. It did not include his capital gains tax cuts for the rich and his estate tax cuts for the rich. So when he responded by saying, in fact, only 22% of Bush's income tax cuts go to the wealthiest 1%, the proper response was, okay, so you're agreeing then with the basic proposition that 43% of his tax cuts are going to the wealthiest 1%. Instead of, okay, he apparently disputed it. Equivocation, you could look at Kellyanne Conway, and to be fair, probably most other presidential spokespersons. You can look at a picture of her and understand what makes her good at her job is that she never answers the actual question that's being asked. Jeff Sessions equivocated to get in trouble when he was asked by Senator, his first testimony, by Senator Al Franken. What would you do if you found out that someone colluded with Russia? And his response was, I'm not aware of anybody colluding with Russia. That's equivocation. It's not the question you were asked. Related to equivocation, maybe going one step further, is something called a red herring. Red herring is a diversion. You're changing the subject. Someone asks you something uncomfortable, you say, oh wait, look over there. Before you come home late, you light a fire in your backyard. Change the subject. When Donald Trump is asked about Russian collusion, the response from the administration is, let's worry about leaks. We're all about leaks. The issue here is leaks. The issue isn't leaks. The issue is collusion. Leaks is a separate issue that maybe should be addressed as well. But it's a separate issue. Donald Trump is asked an uncomfortable question. He talks about the fake media. George Bush Jr., Boy George, used red herrings frequently in dealing with terrorism alerts. Every time there was bad news coming out for George Bush, he raised the terror alert, so all the rage was talking about, terrorism alert, danger, Will Robinson, danger, Will Robinson. When John Kerry, when the Democratic Convention was ending in 2004, when Bush was up for re-election, so-called, Bush went to Pakistan and said, I need big news. I need you to announce the capture of a high Al-Qaeda operative. Pakistan says, we haven't captured anybody recently. They said, you've got someone you've been holding for weeks and trying to interrogate. We want you to announce that you just captured him. And so Pakistan came out with this big announcement that they had just captured the number three in Al-Qaeda, which it turns out they'd had for weeks and in fact undermined their own efforts to interrogate him just so that John Kerry's successful convention would be knocked off the front page of the newspapers. And he did not get the post-convention bounce that is expected every time you have a political convention. When Ronald Reagan pulled us out of Lebanon after terrorist attacks, what did he do? He invaded the island of Grenada. False equivalence has been used a whole lot. That's a reasoning fallacy that needs a lot of discussion. And that's equating two things that are clearly not equivalent. Trump lies, but so does Clinton. Yeah, but Trump lies all the time. Clinton shades the truth on occasion when it's uncomfortable. It's not the same. The biggest false equivalence that we're very sensitive to is, oh yeah, there's Fox News, but there's NBC and it's countering the liberal media all over. ABC, NBC, everybody else is liberal media. The fact is, aside from the fact that most of that media isn't liberal at all, even MSNBC's evenly liberal lineup is not equivalent to Fox News. Why? MSNBC's liberal, progressive evening lineup tells the truth with a liberal, progressive standpoint. Fox News lies all the time to get what it wants. The antithesis, the equivalence of lies on the right is not people telling the truth from the left. The alternative to Forward Nation Radio is not Breitbart. We tell the truth. If we happen to get some facts wrong, we will correct them. This is why, of course, the conservatives are pouncing on CNN having to retract its report the other day. See? They're liars, just like we've said. The implication being, at the best, they're the equivalent of Fox News. But there's a difference. CNN is retracting its report. It said it got it wrong. It didn't mean to do that. One of the things that's come up is James O'Keefe, a conservative gadfly and liar who has a history of running doctored videos to make a point that doesn't exist. He used doctored videos to get rid of ACORN, an organization that had the temerity to try to get people voting rights. So he is, of course, a hero among conservatives because he's a lying piece of shit. Well, he came out with a video, and here's what Sarah Huckster Sanders, presidential spokesperson, said. And no, she is not the equivalent of CJ from West Wing, because she's a liar. Whether it's accurate or not, I don't know, but I would encourage everybody in this room, and frankly, everybody across the country, to take a look at it, referring to the video. She doesn't know if it's true, but you should be looking at it anyway. This is not something that would be coming out of the left. Real quickly, I have to do this. Jon Stewart, we're going to link to this. Jon Stewart had a great bit years ago where he had said that Fox News viewers were the most misinformed people on the planet. And PolitiFact corrected him and said, in fact, they are not more uninformed than a lot of other viewers. Jon Stewart issued an apology at a great show where he listed how Fox News had made all these misstatements over the prior month and never retracted or corrected any of them. That is not the equivalent. By the way, did you notice the equivocation there? Jon Stewart was actually right and apologized when he should not have done so. Jon Stewart said that Fox News viewers were the most misinformed, and PolitiFact corrected him by pointing out that they were not more uninformed than other viewers. Well, it turns out that misinformed and uninformed are not the same thing. And while it's true that Fox News viewers were not the most uninformed on the planet, it actually is true that they are the most misinformed. So he apologized when he didn't even get it wrong. Appeals to a questionable authority is another reasoning fallacy that we need to address and get out there from this administration. We often appeal to authorities for information and for opinions. You're probably doing so right now. But there are certain things that make a qualified authority. And most of what comes out of the Trump administration doesn't qualify. Our president gets his information from Alex Jones. Someone nobody should be getting information from. He gets his information from Fox News and Fox and Friends. Not good authorities. Anytime a sentence starts with, according to a White House spokesperson, you should basically stop listening. Because they are poor authorities that nobody should be listening to. The Trump administration uses oversimplifications. Partly because if you are a simpleton, a simple-minded person, you can't understand nuance, complicated arguments. Oversimplification is when you take a complicated topic and you make it ridiculously simple. Good versus evil. Related to something called a false dilemma. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Recently, Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher came out and said, after ISIS took responsibility for terrorist bombing in Tehran, Dana Rohrabacher said, well, if they don't like Iran, maybe we should be encouraging ISIS, doing more to promote ISIS. That's right, the guy actually said that. This is the theory of the enemy of my enemy must be my friend. Well, things are a little more complicated than that. There's not usually two sides to an argument, there's usually many. We've got the post hoc fallacy, which confuses correlation with causation. The post hoc fallacy, I think, was best described by comedian George Carlin. May he rest in peace. George Carlin pointed out that scientists had just discovered that stomach cancer was caused by saliva, by swallowing saliva, but only taken in small doses over a long period of time. Obviously, swallowing saliva does not cause stomach cancer, but everyone who's developed stomach cancer has swallowed a lot of saliva. Trump belittled the whole concept of jobs reports, said they were all bullshit. But then a month or so into his administration, when a positive jobs report came out, he immediately said, great jobs report, and we take credit for it. With Carrier, he says he saved jobs and other things. We the jobs are staying in this country because of us. Taking credit for things that were going to happen, whether or not he had anything to do with them. Uses lots of overstatements. Does this sound familiar? The best. Unbelievable. Incredible. Always. Anytime you exaggerate, you are committing an overstatement. Donald Trump exaggerates his accomplishments, exaggerates everything about him, his intelligence. Those are overstatements. Overgeneralizations or stereotypes. You know, when Donald Trump talks about all Muslims being evil, all people coming into this country without documents being criminals, those are overgeneralizations where you maybe take the instances of a few people and you generalize it to an entire group. All Jews are cheap or money hungry. Blacks are criminals. And then stereotype, kind of related to that, is when you take that overgeneralization and you apply it to each member of the group. So you look at a black and you grab your wallet because you've overgeneralized blacks to being criminals, and then you stereotype to apply it to a black person you meet, or a Muslim, or a Hispanic. Glittering generalities. The best. Fancy words that give you a good feeling but have absolutely no meaning. Again, a hallmark of this administration. Appeals to emotion, not intellect. Americans are supposed to be making decisions with their brains, not with their guts. This was the great Stephen Colbert, the old Stephen Colbert character, who used to say, I don't need to hear in my brain. I don't need to make my decisions in my brain. I know down here in my gut what the answer is. And he's making fun of people who make decisions with emotion. You are not supposed to make decisions in the heat of anger. We've all had the experience where we've made a really stupid decision. When we've been angry, we stubbed our toe and then managed to hurt our fist by punching whatever it is we stubbed our toe against. This was famously said, revenge is a dish best served cold. Appeals to emotion is basically how Fox News exists. Keep people angry. Make them angry all the time. Feed the anger. Never let them stop to think about the stupidity that they are being exposed to. Just keep them angry all the time and they will be making emotional decisions which will be bad rather than intellectual decisions which might be thoughtful and might obviously go against what we want them to be thinking. Make America great again is a glittering generality and an appeal to emotion. Ad hominem reasoning fallacies is when you attack a person rather than an issue. Donald Trump, during the campaign, talked about crooked Hillary, lying Ted. Was it Little Marco? I forget what was it. Interestingly, these aren't necessarily ad hominem reasoning fallacies. Because when you're running for political office, the person is the issue. And so attacking the person is not necessarily inappropriate. But when Donald Trump is asked a question that might be uncomfortable about an issue, and he responds by bashing the media or bashing the individual who asked the question, which frequently happens, is an ad hominem reasoning fallacy. talking a person rather than an issue. The New York Times reported, oh, what do you expect from the failing New York Times? Rather than addressing an issue, you address a person, or in this case, an entity. Related to an ad hominem is a straw person fallacy, where you make up a boogeyman that you get to attack because the boogeyman is kind of comical in representing the other side. What we describe as an unrepresentative representative. I have a conservative colleague who likes to keep bringing up the Congressional Black Caucus and something that someone in the Congressional Black Caucus said. My response is always, who is that person and who's listening to them? If you want to attack Democrats and what they stand for, attack people that we have chosen to lead us. Attack Barack Obama. But don't find the most ridiculous Democrat and attack him. If I attack Rush Limbaugh on this show, it's because conservatives have chosen to make him their leader and to follow him. And therefore, it's not inappropriate to attack what he stands for. That's related to a broad concept called extension error. Anytime you hear someone from the Trump administration, or a Republican, or anybody for that matter, tell you what their opposition's argument is, you need to be very concerned about extension error, which is misrepresenting the other side's argument. Don't let one side frame the other side's argument. Donald Trump will say, here's what climate science, Democrats think we should do about climate science. The problem is, whatever he says Democrats think is very rarely what they actually think. At the very least, it is an oversimplification of a complicated argument that they may be making. Always look out for extension errors when somebody is telling you what somebody else's argument is. We've got the ad populum reasoning fallacy, arguing that popularity speaks to merit. This is something that Donald Trump engages in himself. Here's a man who obviously feels his self-worth coming from how popular he is, from an opinion poll. This is why it's so important to him that his inauguration be the most attended, that his vote, that his presidential victory was a landslide. Because the presidential vote is not just an indication of who gets to be president, it's an indication of Donald Trump's worthiness. Things are not good just because they're popular. Just because people who watch Fox News think that Ronald Reagan is the greatest president ever, in fact, the greatest man to walk the earth, does not make it true. It just makes it popular. Frequently, the popular opinion is wrong. Don't just accept the merits of something because people tell you it's popular. Another one I like is the perfect is the enemy of the good. We see that one a lot. The perfect is the enemy of the good is passing up a solution which would improve your situation because you find flaws in it. It's not perfect. Boy George famously said, we're not going to enter into climate change. We're not going to sign on to the Kyoto Protocol for climate change because it's not perfect. It's a flawed agreement. But the question, of course, isn't is it a flawed agreement, but is it better than what we've got now? Look at how the perfect of the enemy is of the good has been used with respect to Obamacare. Before it was passed, Republicans would attack it as not being perfect. Look at the flaw. It's not a perfect bill. It's not a perfect bill. But that's not the relevant question. The relevant question is, does it improve the situation from what we've got now? Is it a good bill? If it's a good bill, pass the bill and then work on making it perfect. Whereas instead, of course, the Republicans have passed the bill and then done everything they could to make it imperfect, to undermine it. Now they're in a position where they actually have to govern. And they found out that all their arguments, the perfect is the enemy of the good, well, turns out they can't improve upon the bill. But they promised that they would. But they can't just say we're not going to do anything because we don't have a perfect solution because they've already promised that they've got a better solution. So they're stuck within their own reasoning fallacy. When people tell you that we shouldn't be addressing climate change because we're not sure about all of the issues of climate change, that's a perfect is the enemy of the good. Let's do what seems to be good at this point, and let's work on improving it in the future. Wishful thinking, confusing what should be with what is. America is the greatest country the world has ever seen. Donald Trump is great. This is all wishful thinking. Much of what Trump says is an example of wishful thinking. We're going to make it great. We're going to be the best ever. We're going to win so much, you're going to be tired of winning. In reality, we just keep losing more and more and more under this president. But let's just keep engaging in wishful thinking. Make America great again. We're going to be great. Let's not worry about policy. Let's not worry about difficult details. Let's just engage in wishful thinking. Everything's going to be wonderful. And finally, the last one we're going to discuss is something called the slippery slope fallacy. The idea of the slippery slope fallacy is if you do something, you start a chain of events that you won't be able to stop. Like slippery slope. Once you start down a slippery slope, you're going to start sliding and you're not going to be able to stop your slide. It's just going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. In my experience, almost every time someone discusses a slippery slope to you, it's bullshit. It's a slippery slope fallacy. The way you look to recognize a slippery slope fallacy is ask yourself, could we put a stop to this somehow? Will it inevitably lead to greater and greater disasters, or could we just stop? Where do we see the slippery slope fallacy? Well, we saw it very prominently recently with the issue of same-sex marriage, where no less than a Supreme Court justice who supposedly was very brilliant and is dead now, may he rest in peace, but may he continue resting. Justice Scalia said, if we allow gays to marry, that's going to lead inevitably to people marrying their pets, polygamy, people marrying their family members. To which sensible people said, is there some reason we can't just define marriage as an agreement between two non-related consenting adults? Can we really just not stop with that? Okay, well, that should give you a bit of a background. We will be talking about these fallacies as we go, and as we encounter them in the media, we will be referring back to them. But keep a list handy. Keep your link to this show in particular handy, because these are very valuable. These are tools that will help you to avoid being lied to. Anyway, like looking forward, you'd think after all these weeks, I'd kind of remember this, wouldn't have to read this anymore. Like looking forward, go to forwardnationradio.com, and get the full experience. We've got lots of links up there in case you haven't been there yet. There are lots of links, there are cartoons, there's information. You really should be checking out our website. Go to our YouTube channel. Listen to us on Podbean if you're on the go, our audio cast on Podbean. Most importantly, please, if you like what you're hearing, like us on Facebook, share us with your friends, subscribe to our YouTube channel, spread the word, Forward Nation Radio. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.